But he seems to get on a theme and a talking point, and he won't get off of it no matter what the question is. So that's kind of what I noticed the most is he kind of kept going back to like 3 points just to hammer Biden. So that's kind of what I saw.
And that was probably, what he saw on Fox News. Sir, your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. One of the main things that I think going into this that Trump really had to do is he had to figure out how to talk about things that the average viewer who doesn't spend 24 hours watching Fox News will understand. And he didn't do that. Like he started talking about emails that he got from some Nigerian prince or something, and people who don't read conspiracy sites don't know about that. So there are all of these weird innuendos and these like little buzz phrases, and people are just, I mean, people who don't pay attention to this all of the time, people like, we were talking about my mom, who is my example for everything because she's a Republican, and she's just like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know what he's talking about. And so the majority, I think, of voters who are looking to this debate to see it as, some kind of guidance, they're coming into this going, I don't, nothing he says is making sense.
I'm with you. And Bob, I'm curious your thought as a former Republican, former member of Congress. What did you see tonight?
Well, first of all, the moderator was great. She did a tremendous job. She really did. Kept it for the most part, as best she could on track. Joe Biden had his mantras down. He was in tune, and he looked at the camera like any debate, and he looked right in the eye and said, "Let me tell you, American people, what I think." That's what he did. President Trump didn't do that. The other thing is, and I agree with my two friends here that Trump was all over the place. But one of the reasons, this is my theory behind it too, is he doesn't know enough about the history and the internal guts. For example, if I was there, I would say, "Well, now, excuse me, Mr. Vice President, for 2 years you did have total Democrat control, although we know the Senate and their cloture rule." But I'm just saying there were things that he could have raised. He didn't know to raise them. So he got way off track. Was trying to throw out the same lines. But I must say, obviously the campaign got to Trump because he was more contained than we have seen him in a long time.
Yeah, how much do you think? Because I got to tell you, all of you, one of the first things that struck me was when Joe Biden was speaking, I'm going, "Do you hear that? Silence." They muted him, so I'm like, if that's the first time in three and a half, four, five, almost 5 years that he has shut up, and for me, that was like, yeah, this is what 2021 might look like.
God, wouldn't that be awesome if it was just really quiet for a little bit? And that's one of the things that Trump talked about in his rally this week is, if Biden gets in office, you're going to be so bored. I don't know if, I'm just speaking for me, but I want to be bored. I want things to be quiet so much.
I pine for the days of boredom. So what was in let's start with you, Bob. What was the big issue for you tonight? Was there something that grabbed you? I mean, there was a lot of one-liners. There's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot to 90 minutes. But anything that jumped out at you as maybe Republicans might grab onto?
I mean, we're in a weird, unique time where there's so many big issues. Before there used to be the big issue, there are many now, COVID, et cetera. But to me, and it's something, dear to my heart, but how we handle, for example, the economy in China, how we do that. And, Biden needed to address that. I'm not talking about Hunter Biden or that. I'm talking about the fact of how you handle China because, I watched Republicans and Democrats capitulate to China. I watched union jobs evaporate, et cetera. You've seen it. I've seen it. But I think that was of great interest to me of how they will handle it. So I think for the Republican side, they're probably looking at this saying, well, we kind of had to yield to Trump because most Republicans were free traders. And so I don't think it's going to be a big shock to them if Biden, has a policy with China where he does something about the unfair, trade advantages. I just think Biden will do it in a different style.
Yeah.
But that the economy and how China fits into it is something I pay attention to.
No, we've talked about that at length. We have and I would have liked to have spent a little time on jobs and the economy a little bit more than they
Right.
did.
Right.
But, obviously in 90 minutes with, like, as you've said, so many things going on, It's hard to really delve into. But Phil, I'm curious your thoughts. You know, when you're looking at this from a labor perspective, was there anything there other than Joe Biden coming out saying, you know, he supports $15 an hour?
I wish they would have flushed out the trade deficit with China more with the tariffs. I wish he would have had an opportunity to flush that out more, because there was just a report that the trade deficit is higher now than it was under Obama Biden. So I thought that would have been something to focus on a little bit more. The other thing that struck me is he's going out doing these open rallies all over. He was just in Johnstown at the airport up here. Probably had 2,000 or 3,000 people crammed together, no masks in the crowd. Behind him, they put masks on them now to make it look like there's people with masks. But we had people up there. And I just would like to have seen more flushing out of what is going on with COVID. The fact that Biden did mention that the cases are rising, the deaths are rising. But it just doesn't seem to be real to Trump, and he just kind of glosses over it. And people out in the audience, I don't know if they get a really good sense of the failure there.
Yeah, and I think Biden had probably one of the great lines, over that about living with it. I forget exactly how he put it, but it was a pretty powerful line. He said, he says we're learning to live with it. We're learning to die with it. And I thought that was, 220 plus thousand. They're saying potentially 300,000, more. I've got a listener who's a epidemiologist, a guy who does this stuff, who's saying, we could see, in a couple of months, 3,600 people dying a day if the models are correct. This is scary times.
And one of the things that they kind of talked about, that the way that Trump addressed both the economy and COVID, is he was saying, he's really focused on New York, and like New York is dying, all of these businesses are dying. And I was like, why is he more concerned about businesses dying than he is about people dying? Like, you realize that these businesses, if they're gone, the people are still alive. They still have to live in this world and figure out, what's next for them, not just in terms of healthcare, right? But, their jobs and all of these other things. And that's really why, when Biden came in and started talking about the stimulus deal, and how that we, in times of crisis like this, like, we turn to the government. That's exactly what the government is for, is to swoop in and fix it whenever things are, when we're having a huge disaster. And then, we come back and figure it out later.
Yeah. Were you surprised by the fact that he came out and said that they haven't moved a stimulus bill, because he admitted, it's going to help the Democratic states, that he is front and center making this a political issue? Bob, I'm curious. Are you surprised by that?
No, I mean, look, he's always talked about red states and blue states when it comes to whether it's the economy or energy or COVID. He's always done that. And I thought a good response, he didn't have a good response because, the House passed a bill in May. Mitch McConnell did nothing in the Senate. I mean, they didn't even pass a Republican bill that they could then argue with the House, which is, look, I was there for 11 years. That's what you do. Here's my bill. Your bill is crappy. We'll argue now. That's what you do. They didn't do that. So Trump comes out with his bill. He pulls it off the table at a whim. And then his advisors say, wait a minute. His economic advisor said, great job. Political advisor said, what on earth are you doing? And he put it back on the table for more money, honestly telling Nancy Pelosi, hey, whatever you want to put in there, we'll up it a little bit with money. So I don't think, Rick, to answer your question, I don't think he had a response. He's played the shuffle game with this. Now it doesn't matter what he does. Mitch McConnell's not going to pass it anyway. We know that.
Right. Go ahead, Phil.
I was just going to say, I thought Biden's response to that with, the red state, blue state argument with firefighters, police pensions, all these things that are going to be affected by the tax base in cities like mine here in Johnstown. We have a small town. We have a small police force. The tax receipts are down in this city. You're not going out to dinner. You're not going out to shows. You're not getting any taxes. So I do think that that was a good line, you know, a good response by Biden to talk about police, firefighters, EMTs, teachers, and the salaries and their pensions and things.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, but, you know, here's the thing. He did sit next to Obama for 8 years. And if you go back to 2004, wasn't that Obama's line? You know, we're not red states or blue states. We're the United States.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but you can't steal that line on national television, because then they're just going to be like, oh, you plagiarized.
Of course he did, because it's. I would hope it's the truth. I would hope he would believe it, right?
I would hope that he believes it, but we know Trump doesn't believe that. He believes in the people who love me and the people who don't love me. And the people that love me get all the stuff that they want, and the people that don't love me can die.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me is he took responsibility. I forget how he said, you know, I take responsibility. And I said, as I tweeted out, I go, that's probably the first time he has ever said that.
He did. He said, I take full responsibility, but this is China's fault. Like in the second, like the very next minute of his statement. And you're just like, you literally just blame somebody else after saying you take responsibility. This is such crap.
You know, the other thing, too, that Trump didn't do, I know what he wanted to do. He wanted to say socialism, AOC, socialists, near communists, whatever he wanted to say. He didn't say it. It was very interesting. He never zeroed in on making the point, you know, or healthcare. But you see there again, he can't hit healthcare or Biden because they were going to change healthcare as we knew it. The Republicans, when they got to Senate, were going to change it as we knew it. Nothing happened. No tweaking, no nothing except a court battle. And so I thought that was really kind of the whole healthcare issue, in my opinion at least, was glossed over, period. I thought there needed to be a little bit more definition on it, because the line that Biden used, and he didn't steal it off of me, but I used to use it all the time in Congress when I worked, you know, healthcare. Maxine Waters and I were in the housing subcommittee, and, you know, we talked about healthcare a lot, and we used the same line, which was, It's not a privilege, it's a right. And I just thought the whole healthcare thing, in a sense, was just kind of glossed over. Well, I've got the healthcare bill and this and that. And I just thought it was a very important area, because if the Supreme Court acts, whoever's the president is going to have a nightmare to deal with, whether if Trump's president, whether he realizes it or not.
Yeah, you're right. But do you think Biden did enough in talking about, you know, his Biden care? Because the Twitters were talking about, see, Joe Biden says health care isn't a right, that it's now this, you know, this profit thing. We got to keep the for-profit companies in business. We got to keep the employer-based system still at the heart of everything. Do you think he did enough?
Well, no, in a way, I don't think he did enough, but I don't think he can right now. Let me put it that way. If he got into extreme detail here, he either then basically angers the progressive base that maybe he's strained, you know, from a system, maybe a government system, maybe he's strained a bit. If he goes too far, he might anger people that say, oh, he's going to take away our health care, just like they said about Obama. So I think he's in a fine line there. I don't think he could have really probably... I would like to have seen more definition, but I don't think he can. If he becomes president, it's going to be something he's going to have to deal with and carve something together, because you and I, all of us know, it's not going to hold as it's sitting right now anyway, with premiums and the way they've risen, et cetera.
Yeah, good point. Phil, you got any thoughts?
Yeah, I'd just say that the healthcare issue is so complicated that I just don't know if you could do that in a debate. I don't know how much you can put out. However, I think, you know, again, I think Biden had an opportunity here to talk about 4 years ago. This president made it very clear that they were going to put this great, big, beautiful, tremendous plan into place. And you've never seen one in writing from his staff. All you've seen in the budget proposals for the last 3 years are cuts, including cuts to federal pensions, federal health care, get rid of that. In fact, we just got a letter the other day, our premiums are going up 4.7%, I think. So, you know, there needs to be more focus on that, but I think it's too big. It's not a bumper sticker.
No, and none of this stuff really is. I mean, you know, the COVID response, that you can't boil this stuff down into sound bites, which is what these quick 15-minute hit kind of things get us. So we end up grasping at what little came out. And to be honest,
right.
You know, I saw the debate, and maybe you guys can weigh in on it, as, you know, Donald Trump went there to beat up on Joe Biden. His focus was Joe Biden, and Biden was trying to focus on talking to the rest of us. And that's where I think the disconnect was. You know, Trump was just there to score points, to show that he's the tough guy. And I think Biden, to a little bit, did a good job, as Bob pointed out, you know, talking to the camera, saying, you know, it's about, you know, people who are struggling. That's just the way I saw it. Anybody want to weigh in?
I agree. Now, I think that one of the lines that I loved from, I remember the debate episode of The West Wing, is when Bartlett talks about the 10-word statement that his staff has been looking for, and that leading this country is way too big a job for 10 words. And, you know, we have three debates for a reason, and Trump totally, you know, bit the big one and peaced out of the last one. So this is one of those things where now we are left with just trying to figure out, you know, having to look through somebody's websites, figure out what the real plans are. And I think Trump, what I had read about his advisors, is they were telling him to just give Biden a bunch of space and let him hang himself, because he will. And that really, really backfired tonight. First of all, Biden didn't hang himself. He did an excellent job. I mean, even my Republican mom was like, oh, my God, Biden's killing it. But Trump couldn't stop himself. Right? He just kept talking and interrupting, and he wasn't making any sense. So it just made him look stupider, and Biden be able to talk about issues in a way that I feel like we finally got a minute to hear about.
And you know, that's the other thing, too, is when they had their chance at the end, and this is what baffles me about the Trump campaign. You know, Biden looked at the end, talked about being the president, red state, blue state. You would have thought that Trump would have looked into the camera and said, I want to quote Langston Hughes, dream your dreams, be willing to pay the sacrifice to make them come true. You're sacrificing America. I want to sacrifice for you. The election's done. We're all together. Simple quote, you know? I mean, didn't somebody think to quote somebody, at least give him some quote, where he actually, you know, humanized himself? Because this was his chance, and I agree. I mean, he didn't do it. He was still, this is Trump land.
Well, I just think he really believes his best avenue is the same avenue he took in 2016. Yeah. I mean, divide, get a piece.
Alert Google Chrome.
I mean, I think that's what he's been about, you know, this whole time. He's not made any inroads over the last four years with other people. His whole thing about being a business person, and he was going to get everybody in the room and cut deals. Well, that's actually what things used to be like. You know, you would get something done. I mean, I remember when the congressman was in the House and they would get stuff done. I mean, you would get bills done. You would do a House bill and a Senate bill. And because I used to be up there arguing about prison stuff, because I worked in the federal prison system. And, you know, he's not been able to do any of that. And then, like, I did hear, you know, what you were saying, Bob, about he started negotiations and then he ended them. He did that by tweet. I mean, this is the other thing, you know, it's like, geez, can you, you know, get in a room, you know, you're the president, you know, no, I'm going to stop negotiations by tweet. It's just unbelievable some days.
You know, there was a statement this week by a guy named Frank Luntz, and I think Luntz is probably one, you know, a political genius. I mean, the wordsmith, the guy who brought us death tax, he came out this week and said that the Trump campaign people are probably guilty of political malpractice for the things that they've done, the things they've allowed him to say. And the truth of the matter is to your point, Bob, I don't think anyone can direct him. I think he clearly has his own mindset, and you can say, hey, I want you to do this, or you should be doing this. He's clearly going to do whatever it is that pops in between his ears, I think.
But, and what's coming back to haunt him is, look, I said this about Trump 4 years ago. I thought that he would use Mike Pence, who had been in Congress, who was a governor, knows how to put an office together, You got to make the trains run. You know, Obama knew that. You know, everybody, every president knows that. And I thought he would put together a team that, yeah, he'll complain and say some things, but a team that would run things. He continuously fired the team till it became he and two kids running the place. And it's coming back to haunt them now, because now really nobody can step in and put the machine back together, including the campaign. Of course, he's lost his campaign manager, you know, and got a new one. But it's just all kind of went downhill. And I just don't think he listens. And I don't think, you know, that they got the opportunity tonight that they thought maybe they would. They didn't get it.
Anything tonight that you didn't know? Is there any new information that came out of this? Is there anything tomorrow morning we're going to wake up and go, hey, that's new? Anything we didn't know before it started?
His son had COVID. I didn't know his son had COVID. Did you?
Barron? Yeah. The youngest son did, yeah.
I missed that one. Okay.
That was a story for about 15 minutes. And like many things, I don't talk about his son at all. He's a minor.
I was surprised. I had never heard that.
Yeah. And Melania supposedly isn't on the campaign trail because she still has a persistent cough, which I think is convenient for, I don't want to have anything to do with this.
There was no fly tonight.
There was no fly.
I was so sad. I missed the fly.
No fly.
One of the things, I don't know if you heard him say this in passing, but he made a comment about, I've got bank accounts everywhere. How was that not part of the Mueller investigation? How was that not part of what people were looking into to see what kind of money he was accepting from other people from accounts that were not affiliated in the United States and that would have tracked all of that stuff? Like, that seems like a really big deal. Like, we're not talking just about China, which we found out about this week, that he has an account in China, but apparently he's got them everywhere. Like, are we talking the Caymans, or like, where are these bank accounts? Is there one in Russia? How much money is in it? Where did it come from?
And exactly the reason that we've been wanting to see the tax returns and why that is such an issue. I mean, every time he opens his mouth to talk about this, he just confirms why we wanted to see the tax returns.
4 years he's been under audit. What is happening with his taxes that would necessitate a four-year audit?
Well, I think
you
addressed
that. You think Steve Mnuchin could get hold of that, considering he runs the Treasury Department. He could find out which nasty IRS agent has been holding up this guy's taxes for 4.5 years. You know, we are federal employees. They can't ask us what we're doing.
There you go.
It's just too comical some days. But I did think Biden got a good line off on that issue, which is quit talking about corruption. You know, I've released 22 years of tax returns. Release your taxes. I mean, I thought was a pretty good line. And tomorrow, I think what you're going to see from the Trump administration is Joe Biden is shutting down the oil industry.
I was going to go next. I mean, because for me, the big thing that came out of this was his saying we want to move away from oil, which, you know, people like me have been saying for years, we do need to move away from it, not shut it off tomorrow, but we need to be transitioning. And I think Joe is spot on right. But the other side of this, Phil, and you being from Western Pennsylvania, where the fracking issue is so important and so out front, did he do enough to allay people's fears about you know, the radical left and AOC +3 is going to come in and shut down the frack gas?
I don't think those people are listening. I mean, I think they've got it in their heads that, you know, we obviously have the trades out here. They're a big part of Western PA unions. They're a very strong advocate for their employees. I get that. But he has made these comments not very dissimilar to what Clinton said about coal, which is we're going to have to transition and get these people retrained into other industries and other types of energy. She had a 35 minute piece on that, and it was cut down into, you know, a 30 second ad that she was going to get rid of all the coal miners. And that's what they're going to do with this, with oil now, is it'll be cut down to this. And that's all you're going to see play out here in Western Pennsylvania. When he's been out here to small towns, he's been to Gettysburg, he's been to Johnstown, he's talked about this. He's been out to, Butler and Pittsburgh and you know, more than the other campaign did in 16. And he's tried to lay this out, and you can only hope that reasonable people will understand that, you know, he has said he wouldn't frack new fracking leases on federal land. That's it. But they're going to turn it into something else.
Yeah, and it's that caveat that's important, because I've had people tell me, oh, he's going to ban fracking. I go, no, you do have to read the rest of the sentence, much like, you know, the same people who read the Second Amendment the way they do. It's the entire sentence, the entire thought that I think is important. All facts in evidence. Let's try that, because you're right. He did say he would ban all fracking and drilling on federal land, which I think a majority of people are in favor of. Now, there are some extremists who say we should just be drilling everywhere. But I think that's a problem.
Almost everybody. It does not pull very well at all. Like this idea of fracking and drilling in the Grand Canyon, like that stuff like that does not pull well at all.
I think it's territorial. You know, in eastern Ohio, you're not going to convince a lot of people that Joe Biden will leave their jobs alone. You're not going to convince them, because Hillary and the mistake in West Virginia, you know, that still all just resonates down there. So there's pockets where people pay very strict attention to that. And I'm not sure, you know, like I said, in eastern Ohio, that Biden really can do anything in particular to move that pin, you know. But there's other areas of votes that they go after, no matter what they take. And I assume that the Trump campaign is going to run these in Pennsylvania, Eastern Ohio, et cetera, these types of ads. I'm shocked that they didn't center on, you know, some statements. Look, I was in Congress for 11 years. Joe was out there for a long time. I'm shocked that the Trump campaign did not focus on statements, trade bills with Biden, et cetera, over the years, and just narrow those into pinpoint laser ads in Pennsylvania and, you know, Ohio and different areas. They've kind of actually failed to do that, where they would have at least put, I think, Biden on the defense.
I think that goes back to your whole thing about how there are not people in his team who are experienced at government. It's the same for politics. These people don't know what they're doing in politics. They don't know how to, you know, Google bills or understand how to run an office or how to make a bill become a law. Like these are very simple things. And it's the reason that the Trump campaign has flopped and the administration has been unable to actually perform anything in Congress, get anything passed.
Well, you know, you make a valid point. You know, I was on the NRCC board for a while, and when a candidate would come in and say, I'm not a politician, I'm a businessman, I used to say, they'll have the worst office in Congress, the worst office, because, you know, it's a political system. And Trump did that. And if he would have just kept that mantra, but let people run the system, because the train runs out of the White House for all the cabinet, et cetera, it'd probably be a different world today that we'd be talking about tonight.
Mm-hmm. Phil, you want to weigh in?
Well, I think he's, I was up, you know, we represent all the federal employees across Pennsylvania and Delaware. I can tell you the trains are not running on time. It is a mess out here. The VA is 50,000 short of employees. He cut 6,000 positions out of the Bureau of Prisons. He reinstituted privatization in the Bureau of Prisons. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on. The EPA is just a mess. I mean, here's an agency that was created under Nixon. This was not, you know, some left-wing crazy idea. And it is, we have scientists leaving in droves. The criminal investigators have left because they're not allowed to do their jobs. And it's just some of the people he's put in place don't like government, and they'd rather just destroy the agencies instead of running them properly, which would have made him more successful. I mean, the irony is, if the government is if Social Security is getting all the checks out on time, if the VA is taking care of veterans the way they are, he gets credit for that. Mm-hmm. If he puts people in place that are destroying those things, then, you know, it goes up and down the chain. And it's just, it's interesting to me that coming from where he came from, running a company, that he couldn't have figured that out in the beginning.
Yeah, a company that filed bankruptcy three times.
Well, I get that, but I just thought that
for five different companies.
That's true.
Well, there is that. But, you know, here's the thing, and to highlight, you know, and Bob and I have talked about this a couple of times recently, that, you know, he had the campaign stunt of, we're going to give out those $200, you know, gift cards for prescription drugs to all the seniors, and they couldn't get that out in time because they're not making the trains run on time.
I would have liked to have also seen tonight when the immigration issue came up, because nobody raises this, and I know Biden's people have to know it. Trump has made an assault on legal immigration. He has made a pure assault. And Rick, you and I have talked about things that are not even told in the media. They're denying students at embassies. That's because of the word of the administration. They're denying marriages of people right and left. In Philippines, it's went down to 62% approval of legitimate marriages. And this is happening. And I mean, it's been very interesting because tonight, when you say immigration, it was all illegal. But he's got Miller in the White House that hates legal immigration, how our relatives have come here, you know, in the last 20 years. And it would have been kind of amazing if Biden could have twisted that and said, wait a minute. Yeah, there's the undocumented aspect. But what about what you are doing to people who are legitimately trying to come here? It would have been a fascinating twist, because a lot of people, I think, would have said, wow, is he really doing that? I don't think people know.
Yeah. Do you think Do you think that would have been, you know, something that his base would have wanted to hear, though? You know, because I don't think, because most of the people I know who are Trump supporters, they want nobody coming here. They want the doors sealed up tight. They want it welded shut. They want, you know, concrete barricades against it. They want nobody coming. So I don't know. That would just help his base a little bit, I think.
Well, yeah, but the base, he's, you know, he could shoot somebody in Manhattan. So he's got the base. I think it would have been fascinating to see how he would respond to that, because, you know, some people that support Trump, they don't like wouldn't like that aspect of restricting legal immigration, but also would have made him throw this out here and at least have to answer, you know, are you really doing that? Is Miller doing this in the White House? You're letting him do it. I thought it would have been a very interesting twist, only because nobody talked about this. Nobody.
And I wonder if they kind of don't get into the issue of migrant work. You know, they used to have a group of folks come in each year, you know, pick fruit in Florida, then move up all the way up into Pennsylvania, eventually doing, you know, tomatoes and mushrooms and everything else that happens up here in the center part of the state. And there's been reports that, you know, farmers are struggling to get their crops in and those kind of things because of that immigration that's not happening. Right. And those folks would come in on a visa and go back home. Mm-hmm. They would make their money and go back, and then they would come back for the growing season. Nothing seems to get talked about there either. That would be another interesting topic, I think.
You know, I'm thinking about all of these great topics, and, you know, you could have hours long debates, but I go back to what, you know, Bob said at the beginning of, I personally think Trump's about an inch deep. I don't think he has a firm grasp of all of the dynamics. And I think it would be one of those things that it would be a very short debate, because there's not much there. Now, I get you can't know everything about everything. You do put people into positions that you trust. And again, I evaluate the people that Trump's put into those positions. And to your point, Phil, earlier, he's put people in there who despise the agencies, and all they're trying to do is destroy them.
Yeah, it's a it's one part of this that the sad part is that there's a lot of good federal employees that want to do work for the public. That's why, I mean, I got recruited to go to work. I came out of the military and was recruited to go work for the Federal Bureau of Prisons. Shouldn't make my job harder because of who you appoint. Shouldn't make my job harder because COVID, you know, we had a director that made the decision to keep moving inmates around without testing. You know, we sent staff from Pennsylvania, the center of Pennsylvania, over to New York City when they were having their spike without testing them. And when they came back, they weren't quarantining them. So it was just a spreader event, you know, because the director, who this guy appointed, didn't know what to do, or certainly didn't care enough to do his job right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sad where we're at. So let's kind of wrap this up a little bit. Tomorrow, what are we expecting the headlines to be tomorrow? Bob, I'll start with you.
Well, I think it's very clear that you know, Trump did okay, and okay wasn't good enough. Biden won the debate. Biden did not make a flaw. I don't see anything that he said that could be the wow, you know, because I didn't walk away from anything where Joe Biden said, wow, I can't believe he said that. So I think that Biden, you know, this is over with now. They've got a campaign. We know the Electoral College states. So I think that in general, they're going to say Biden won. But Trump's behavior was better, so he'll get a little tiny star.
Yeah, the bar was not high for him.
He went to the eighth grade, okay?
Sarah, your thoughts?
Bob's right. Like, this is one of those things where because the bar was so low for Trump that we could hardly even see it, everybody's going to be fawning over themselves, being like, oh, he was presidential tonight because he stopped talking for 2 seconds. And it's the bigotry of low expectations, which is, I feel like, this entire presidency. Because he didn't set the podium on fire, he somehow did a good job. He was a good boy. But I think people who actually watched it and were paying attention know that Biden was the one who was the presidential one and gave actual answers and cares about people's lives. And I just hope that that carries on to the ballot box.
Phil?
Yeah, I think it'll be both sides will say they won tomorrow. I think I already have 5 emails. And, you know, they're gonna come out and say what each of them said that was great. Unfortunately, I think what Sarah said and the congressman said is, you know, the bar was so low for him after the first debate that by just standing there and not completely trying to overrun Biden and over, you know, speak over him, that's going to be a win for him or some sort of he's presidential, which, you know, I don't know how you get that from that guy ever, but I guess that's what'll be the narrative tomorrow.
Yeah, I see. As was, you know, for him, that frame of, you know, he didn't interrupt too much. About 10 minutes into the debate, I guess maybe like 20 minutes, I said, you know, he better start interrupting because he's really getting his behind kicked. Because he was. I mean, actually having to listen to a full answer and not be able to knock Biden off of his sentences, which he did in the first debate, I thought really effectively. We got to see Joe Biden actually be able to answer a question. We got to see him complete a sentence, and I think he did real well, really well. I don't think this is going to move the needle. Anybody agree that not going to move the needle?
Agree.
No. We're at 50 million people have already voted.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people know where they are.
There you go.
If they don't, then they're people who just hate everybody.
Guys, I really appreciate the time. I appreciate you chiming in, sharing some of your thoughts with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
I'd love to hear your thoughts. If you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com, send me a direct message. All of that, I'd love to hear it. But a very interesting, very, very interesting debate. Thanks so much for tuning in.